Hey guys, welcome back to the Misfits and Mysteries podcast. We are your weekly podcast for all things weird and wacky, from Bigfoot and aliens to psychology and history and everything in between. We are your hosts, Emmy.
And Steve, oh my God, my voice cracked. I'm in my mid-20s. That's embarrassing.
There's like some kind of bug going around, I think.
I don't know what's going on. But yeah, so we're on vacation again. We'll have a new episode out for you guys next week. But for now, enjoy this awesome old one. It was our interview with Brendan Steer,
This is one of our favorites.
the director of the VelociPastor. It was a ton of fun having him on. If you guys haven't, you should go check out the VelociPastor. We'll see you next week with an all new episode. Sorry we needed to take time off. I just started a new job, and last week was 4th of July, and there's just no scenario where I was gonna record and edit an episode on time. So like we said, screw it, we need a break. Everyone does it. Everyone takes breaks.
But we'll be coming at you next week with
Next.
a brand new episode.
Yeah, next week. So in the meantime, enjoy the show.
Hello, Misfits, and welcome back to the Misfits and Mysteries podcast. We are your home for everything weird and wacky, from Bigfoot and aliens to psychology and history and everything in between. We are your hosts, Emmy.
And Steve.
So, Steve, how you doing?
Great. I mean, I'm so excited for this episode. We
Yeah.
had an awesome person on. We had the genius behind the VelociPastor. He wrote and directed it. He literally did everything pretty much. Brendan Steer. It is one of my favorite interviews we've done. He is awesome. It was so much fun.
If you guys haven't seen the VelociPastor yet, you might get some spoilers. So if you want to watch it, you should go do that now.
Yeah,
It's only 70 minutes.
it's 70 minutes. We will link to it in the description. Like, please do yourself a favor. Because also, instead of Kid Nation this week, we're going to do a recap of the VelociPastor. So please watch it. We'll send you the link. It supports our good friend Brendan Steer, and it's an amazing movie. Amazon Prime Video, we're going to link to it. So you can just click in the description. Yeah, so I'm excited for that. But before we jump in, just a few things that we want to go over. We now have a merch store, so please go check that out. It's on TeePublic. It's Misfits and Mysteries. We're going to link to that again in the description. You can find it on our social media, on our link tree, but we'll have it there so you can easily find it. We have some cool designs. So far, we just have three, but the designs go on pretty much everything from t-shirts to sweatshirts to coffee mugs. So, like, please go buy some merch and
Get a
rep.
t-shirt for yourself, get a onesie for your baby,
Yeah.
whatever, throw it on your dog.
Yeah, the one thing they don't have, unfortunately, is hats, but in the future we will have bucket hats
And
that.
I'm really hoping to get a fanny pack
Oh
going.
yeah, a fanny pack, but eventually. And then one last thing before we really jump in, please, if you enjoy this show, please give us a nice review and rate us on iTunes. It really helps with our visibility, especially with climbing the charts. Like a month or two ago, when you guys were nice and gave us some good ratings, we actually skyrocketed up to somehow 96th in the United Kingdom, which is pretty sweet. But we also have been number like 100 in the American charts, which is awesome, right? And the only way to sustain those numbers is through viewerships and you awesome listeners going in and rating us and giving us positive reviews.
Yes. And if you've already done so, thanks so much.
Yeah, pat yourself on the back. You're a hero.
Should we dive in?
Let's dive in. What did you prepare for us here? I remember you were so excited to tell us about it last week, but you held off.
So I'm going to tell a dinosaur story because, we have the VelociPastor coming up. So I'm going to talk about a dinosaur story, and then Steve and I will talk about VelociPastor, and then we'll hear from Brendan just to give
Yeah.
you guys a rundown. So, this is the story of the Spinosaurus. And
Ooh.
it's a little bit different than the stories that I usually do because it is fully real. 100% real. And I actually found this story on the Nat Geo podcast. I think it's called Overheard at Nat Geo. So mm-hmm. you guys should check out that podcast because it's awesome. But anyway, so this is the story of the Spinosaurus. So Steve, I'm sure you've seen this dinosaur before. It's like the one.
It's in Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah.
Jurassic Park, like three.
He's got the big fan on his
back. Yeah. When I was a little kid, I used to have the Jurassic Park Spinosaurus toy. So yes, I'm well aware. And it made noises too. When you press, because all the Jurassic Park toys, like when we were growing up, this might be dating us. I don't even know if they have those anymore, would have like a scratch mark on them where you could see like their ribs. And if you press one of their ribs, they made dinosaur noises.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But yes. So that's the Spinosaurus. And it's kind of looks like a little T-Rex, but kind of mm-hmm. hunched over with a fan. And it's interesting because like this is seemingly one of the most well-known dinosaurs, like in kids' coloring books and toys and whatnot. But up until 2019, there was not a single complete skeleton of mm-hmm. Spinosaurus, and they did not know much about it. And so this is the story of how they figured out that it did not look anything like they thought it did. So the little like Spinosaurus toys that you have are completely wrong.
I refuse to believe that. Let's agree to disagree. My 2000 2000 aughts Jurassic Park Spinosaurus is definitely the most accurate.
Well, just you wait. So the first skeleton of the Spinosaurus was found in the 1910s by this guy named Aaron Stromer, and he found it in Egypt, and he named it the Spinosaurus because of the big sail on its back.
Mm-hmm.
And all he had of the skeleton was the ribs, the jaw, and a few of the spines. So they kind of just like put the pieces together and they're like, okay, it's probably like, you know, a T-Rex-y kind of thing that has the spine on its back. Unfortunately, this skeleton was taken to a museum that was later destroyed in a bombing raid in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really sad because it literally lasted for millions of years and then was
killed.
It was in the museum for 10 years and got blown to pieces. So there's this Nat Geo researcher who was like, I am going out to find a fucking Spinosaurus, because literally there was not a single skeleton of one existing anywhere in the world up until like late 2000s. So this researcher, he's like out in Africa and he comes across this man at a market who's selling fossils. He just like has fragments of fossils in a box.
Yeah.
And he picks up this one piece that looks like a blade and it has a red streak in it. Okay. That's mm-hmm. important. Remember that.
There's a red streak in it. Got
it. Yes. And this researcher's like, I think this, like, I just have a hunch that this might have come from a Spinosaurus.
Mm-hmm.
So he puts it in his pocket and like kind of forgets about it. And not, I don't think puts in his pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
I know what you mean. He forgot he had it.
Yeah. He's just like, I have this little piece of a fossil, but like whatever. And then a few years later, he is in this Italian museum and they take him to the basement, as the researchers do. And they have this incomplete skeleton of a Spinosaurus. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we think it's a Spinosaurus, but like, we're not sure. And like, we don't know where it came from at all. So we just can't figure it out. But he looks at the bones and mm-hmm. there is a red streak running through it. So he's like, oh shit. I think this bone that I found in a fucking box in Egypt might be part of this skeleton that you guys have.
Oh, wow.
If that's not fate, I don't know what is. So now this man is on a fucking mission and he gets a grant And the only thing the grant is for is like he is going around Africa trying to find this man with the box to try to see where he dug up that fossil.
Yeah.
That seems like an impossible task because in Egypt and Morocco, fossil hunting is such a big thing. And there are so many people that do it and just walk around with boxes of fossils.
Yeah.
So this researcher just heads off to Africa looking for one man, looks for literally a year, and is like, fuck it. Like, I can't find him. He's sitting in a cafe. He has a flight book back. And while he's sitting in the cafe, the guy walks past him. Mm-hmm. And so this story is just like a whole, like, meant to be kind of story. So he talks to the guy and he's like, yeah, I found that fossil. Like, I can take you back and show you where I found it. But like, I don't think that anything's there. Mm-hmm. So he takes the researcher back to the spot. They go digging. And of course, he starts uncovering the rest of the dinosaur.
Oh, and wow.
So now they have the most complete Spinosaurus collection ever found. And he combines it with the other half from the Italian Museum. And it turns out that the Spinosaurus was actually a water dinosaur.
Oh, wow. I actually have heard that because I watch, because I'm so cool. I just sometimes will just watch PBS Eons. I watch literally every single episode of it on YouTube. I mean, I knew that it was like a fish eater. I didn't know that.
So, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it was the first ever water dinosaur found.
That's really cool.
And how they figured that out was it had these teeth like crocodiles do that are good for catching like slippery animals. Its bones were very dense, like kind of like a manatee, which helps with buoyancy. But then the last thing is it has a flat rectangular tail that acts as like its motor. And see, this tail is 20 to 30 feet long.
Oh my God.
So the whole dinosaur is 50 feet long. That's longer That's longer than a school bus.
Well, no wonder they were aquatic. Imagine having to drag that freaking 30-foot tail across the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So he would just use that tail and, like, motor his way through the water.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so that was the first ever water dinosaur found. And a lot of people didn't believe it at first until they kind of the evidence showed that this had to be what it was. So now all those toys and all those books are like completely wrong. But I think the most interesting part about this story is thinking about how all that we know about dinosaurs is a very incomplete picture or like very incomplete skeletons that researchers try their best to put together, but sometimes can be so wrong.
Yeah. What I've wanted to do for a little while now, but I have to figure out the right format. I don't think the podcast is quite right to like display this information. One of the things I've been really interested in is, do you remember how different dinosaurs have looked like throughout our lives? Like just even throughout our lives, which is only like a few decades. So it's just the way that they've changed so much. I'd be really fascinated to look back at, I almost feel like a visual format is better than a podcast because I don't want to describe things to people, you know?
Yeah.
But I would love to do like a deep dive into how like paleo art has changed and like how our depictions of them have changed since like the 1800s. I sort of started looking into this for this episode, but I didn't really think there was that much to it. But there's this place in London called the Crystal Palace, which unfortunately we never went to, but it was like 2 hours outside of where we lived when we were in London. So like, I don't blame us, but it's called the Crystal Palace. And in the 1800s, the Victorians created what they called Dinosaur Park, where they created a bunch of dinosaurs, like sculptures. And they are completely wrong by today's standards, but they're really interesting. It's like actually really cool because it's really interesting to see how the Victorians thought they looked. And I would love to eventually be in a like, figure out the correct format to present it, but do some research on how our presentation of what dinosaurs look like has changed from way back when to today.
Mm-hmm.
Because now everyone knows that there are avian and non-avian dinosaurs. Dinosaur means terrible lizard. Because for so long, we just thought dinosaurs were giant lizards. But
yeah,
in reality, not all of them, but a lot of them were avian dinosaurs and were more like birds are today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some of them were in the water.
Yeah, some of them were aquatic. What's your favorite dinosaur?
Oh, that's a good question. Now I'm forgetting the name of it.
Describe it.
It's got like a ball on its tail.
Oh, I can't think of it either. I know what you're talking about. Did I ever show you this beer, Dinosaurs and Lederhosen?
No.
Here, I turn my camera on to show you. It wasn't that expensive, but I just love this. It's a German beer. I love this beer can so much.
Oh my God. I love that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cute.
I know. I just kept it because it's really cool. If everyone wants to see it, it's called Dinosaurs and Lederhosen. I know what you're talking about. I don't know. I think I might go with, I never liked T-Rex. I never was a T-Rex guy.
Really?
Yeah, I was never a T-Rex guy. I thought they were overrated. I think I'm more of also it's an Ankylosaurus. That's what you're thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
I used to want to be a paleontologist when I was a little kid, so I know my dinosaurs. Thank you. I mean, I never really liked raptors either. I think I always either liked a Stegosaurus or a Triceratops. I don't know which one I like more, though.
Yeah. I'm also a big Triceratops fan.
Yeah. I think this is a conversation for another time because I have to do more research on it to make sure I'm right. But you know that Triceratops? There's like something where the Triceratops is all wrong.
Really?
Yeah. Or I don't remember exactly. See, I don't want to talk about it right now because I didn't do my research, but there's something where it's like they thought that there were two different species, but it's really just the same, like Triceratops and something else are actually just two different life stages of the same species.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't really want to go into that right now just because I didn't prepare that. And I don't want to just like make shit up. But yeah, just an interesting thing.
This is kind of a weird question, but something I was wondering while listening to this Nat Geo podcast is, like, if the Spinosaurus is the first water dinosaur, like, what are the other creatures in the ocean? Like,
there were fish back then, because we all evolved from fish. There was, like, some sort of fish. There were, I can't think of what they're called. I don't think the Spinosaurus is in the ocean. I think that they were, like, probably like more like alligators, right? So they probably lived in, like, swamps. There were, I can't think of what they're called. This might be too early for the Megalodon. There were like all sorts of sharks and stuff.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, what qualifies something as a dinosaur?
Oh, actually, it's something to do with, like, the bones.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Let's try to get some of PBS Eons on to answer our dinosaur questions.
I have a lot of dinosaur questions.
I watch PBS Eons all the time. I bet we can get one of them on. Not Jeff Green, though. I think he's too big for us, but
yeah.
The other two on there, I really think we could get them on here because they're not too big. Their social media following's like not that much bigger than ours. And I want to know about dinosaurs. I'll be like, hey, we're going to sit here quietly. You just tell us things about dinosaurs and show us pictures, and then we'll be quiet. We'll be like, we'll just ask our questions and that's it.
Sounds good to me.
All right. So do you want to jump into our discussion of the Velocipaster?
I do.
All right. And we're back.
We're back.
So now we're going to talk about the Velocipaster because we have the creator of the Velocipaster, Brendan Steeron. His interview is coming in after this. We really urge you guys. This is an awesome film. Please just come back to this. Don't stop and don't come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just pause, assess for a second. Do you have an hour and 10 minutes of your life to give up for this awesome film? When the answer is yes, you hit the pause button.
Yeah.
Go watch The Velocipaster on Amazon. The link will be in the description. We'll also probably put a blog out with all of Brendan's links so you can find him. And then after that's over, immediately ends, right? Maybe use the bathroom if you have to go. And put your headphones back on or speaker, whatever your podcast, and hit the play button.
We're in the middle of a pandemic. What else are you doing?
Yeah, seriously. If you're like going out and about and partying, like, what are you doing?
So
you've been warned. We're about to start talking about the Velocipaster. You've had ample time to pause this. Spoilers ahead.
If you want to just get some basic information before we dive into the interview, keep listening.
Yes. Okay. So I've seen this twice. I need you to recap how you felt about the very opening scene.
The very opening scene?
Yes.
So my very first note is this pastor is gay as fuck.
That's not what I was thinking, but...
So I know, but I just wanted to put that out there. That was my first impression.
That's incredible.
So anyways, the opening scene is there's a pastor and I think he hears some kind of commotion outside. He goes outside and realizes that his parents' car is on fire. But he looks over and there is not a burning car there. There are just the words car on fire.
Yes, that's what hooked me, is that instead of having any special effects, Brendan just put VFX car on fire.
Yep.
And then the best part too is like, though, that's the explosion, right? And then the best part too is then they cut to another scene like later after cut to his face and the car is actually on fire. So it's like, oh my God, this is a great start.
And at this point, I hadn't really looked that much into the Velocipaster before watching it. So I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be like a serious movie or like trying to, you know, low budget, but still trying to look very professional. And once I saw that, I was like, all right, I know where we stand now.
Yeah. See, that's what I love about this movie is there are a lot of low budget movies that think that they're good. Brendan knew exactly what he was able to do with 30K. And he was like, okay, we're going to make something that is great and hysterical. So then after the main character's name is Doug. Also, he kind of looks like John Mulaney, but like more in shape.
I could see that.
So after his parents die, he goes to China and is just casually walking through the what is clearly the forest of Pennsylvania. And then a woman is being pursued by like some ninjas. And then she gives him like a dinosaur.
No, claw. First, he just happens to like shoot an arrow.
Oh yeah.
And just hits this woman and runs up and is like, oh my God, are you okay? And before she dies, she hands him this thing.
Yeah, like a dinosaur tooth, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
And then the ninjas go to like attack him and then he gets cut by it and gets velociraptor powers.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then he wakes up in his like priest thing. What do you call it? A church? I don't know. I said a priest thing.
I think it's just the church.
Yeah. And then he goes outside and there is the most aggressive homeless man, even by New York City standards out there, like demanding money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, no, I don't have any money. I gave all my worldly possessions. And he runs away. And then what's her name? I forgot to write it down.
Carol.
Carol?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Then Carol walks by, who is a... Let's just get out of the way now. I love how she's a prostitute who's also pre-law and pre-med. How the hell does she have time to be a prostitute if she's doing law school and med school stuff?
School's expensive. You got to hustle.
But law school on its own takes up all your free time, and med school on its own takes up all your free time. How the hell does she have free time to do even just two of those? You can't have a third activity. That's insane.
I respect Carol's hustle.
I do too. I'm just saying there's not enough time in the day for that to be possible. But
that's not the most unbelievable thing about this movie.
Okay, fair. That's fair. That is fair.
So, yeah, she runs into this homeless guy, but then keeps walking. And she runs into her pimp, I guess, right? I think so.
Frankie Mermaid.
Frankie Mermaid.
He's the greasiest motherfucker I've ever seen in my life.
And his name is Frankie Mermaid, quote, because he's swimming in bitches. So That's a great line.
Yeah, it's really funny. And then Frankie Mermaid makes Carol work the park. So I guess that's where you get prostitutes. I don't know.
Yeah.
And she gets attacked by someone. And then Doug, for some reason, is running around the park at night. And he's running hunched over because he's transforming into a velociraptor. And then he attacks the guy. And he is a T-Rex.
This is where we get the first glimpse of the dinosaur.
Yeah. And it's incredible. He's literally just dressed as a T-Rex.
He is a paper mache T-Rex.
Yes.
You can like see exactly the outline of the man in this costume. Like, it's way too small for an actual man.
Brendan will tell us more about that in the interview.
You'll hear more about the costume later in the episode.
Yeah. So he guess he rips off the guy's head and a dummy head just rolls by, which is really funny. All right. And then, so he wakes up in the morning, right? Because he wakes up in Carol's bed, right?
Yeah.
And just imagine for a second that you wake up thinking you lost your virginity and it turns out you actually turned into a dinosaur and ate a man.
I don't know. For a priest, I don't know what's worse.
I don't know what's worse, but just imagine it's like, I lost my virginity last night. I broke my priestly vows. Oh no, actually, I turned into a dinosaur and ate somebody.
Yeah. Well, Carol tells him what happened and he's like, what? I don't believe you.
He said, dinosaurs aren't real.
Yeah, dinosaurs don't exist. And she's like, I will go show you the body. But first, she has to give him some clothes because I don't know if they got ripped off when he turned into a dinosaur or what, but he doesn't have any clothes.
I think it's like probably like a werewolf type deal where you rip your clothing.
Yeah, probably. So she gives him like this really tight knit dress and they're walking around the woods and he, like, you can just see his balls.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other way around it.
And then they find the body and he's like all upset. So he's like, no, dinosaurs aren't real. And he's all upset they killed someone. And then he's at confession and Frankie Mermaid comes in. And is just the biggest scumbag and pretty much admits to killing his parents for fun. And he turns partially into a raptor with just the hands and kills Frankie Mermaid. And then he refinds Carol and becomes a superhero.
Yes. So I was very surprised when he killed Frankie Mermaid because I was like, all right, he already avenged the guy that killed his parents. Like, what is left to happen here? Like, where is the story going now?
And it goes. It goes.
It keeps chugging along.
Yeah.
So he's just talking to Carol, and this scene was like not that important for us to discuss, but there was just a line that I have to bring up.
Go for it.
And they decide that they're gonna kind of be this duo, like where the priest is gonna like eat all the bad guys and Carol's gonna help him. And Carol goes, I don't know much about God. And the priest goes, yeah, well, I don't know much about dinosaurs. And then they just decide that they're going to be together.
Yeah, I know. It was cute. It's such a funny thought process, though. It's like, you teach me about God, and I'll teach you about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So then I sort of jumped, because there's a big montage of them fighting bad guys. And then I guess I can't think of his name. The other priest sort of sees him with the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then doesn't he he admits that he is a velociraptor.
Yeah. And the father doesn't believe him.
Yeah. And then he takes him for an exorcism. Yeah. And then there's a flashback to that guy in like Vietnam. And again, it's just the woods in Pennsylvania, which is so funny.
Yeah.
And then so it was like his friend. He talks about his, like, trauma. His friend is just, like, casually talking about how he never got shot once and then gets killed.
Just, and he gets covered in blood.
And then he's, like, all traumatized. And then his sweetheart or wife or whatever from home just is randomly in Vietnam and steps on a landmine and explodes all over him.
Just right in front of him.
Yeah. And it's just, like, I love how, like, the story arc is just one scene of his best friend getting shot and then his wife randomly appears in Vietnam and explodes.
And then the flashback is over and we're back in the exorcism.
Yeah.
So the guy who's conducting the exorcism is like doing all these rituals. And then Doug kind of freaks out and says that he feels very hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears as though he kills the other pastor.
Yeah, that's, I can't think of his name. Do we ever figure out what it was?
I don't know. I just kept referring to him as the father.
Yeah, same.
So he eats the father and then spares the guy who conducted the exorcism.
Yeah. And then is the next scene when they get ambushed by ninjas in Carol's apartment, or is the next scene with the main bad guy?
I think that there's the sex scene and then they get ambushed.
Oh yeah, they have a sex scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they get ambushed, but he doesn't turn into a dinosaur, right? Doesn't he just like have karate skills randomly?
Yeah.
They both do.
Yeah. But let me just say, the sex scene was extremely tasteful.
It was. It really was.
I thought it was going to be like really bad, but like Brendan, wow, you did a great job with that.
I kind of wish he turned into a dinosaur. That would have been really funny.
Yeah. but it was just like normal two human beings, and like there was a lot of music montage, flashbacks. It was really well done.
It was good. It wasn't like a major motion picture where they're like actually pretending to have sex. And it's like, no. Who actually wants to watch this?
No. Yeah.
Those are always like the worst parts of films. They're so uncomfortable to watch. It's like, I don't really want to watch these two actors pretending to have sex with each other.
Yeah. Especially, it depends who you're watching it with too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So then after they beat up the bad guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
They really quickly give up the location of their like leader.
Yeah.
And okay, so my one comment is, he put a leather jacket on. I feel like if you're going to fight ninjas, isn't a leather jacket like not giving you the adequate mobility to like do karate stuff?
Yeah, but you look sick.
He looks like a badass, but like I'm just saying I don't think that it would give him the proper mobility to punch.
Yeah, I feel that.
So then they're at like the evil person. Oh, I guess then it's the father. What happens next, right? My notes are kind of all over the place.
Yeah, so this scene is actually very important. So it's the father that in my notes, I called him the VP, Velociraptor Priest.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to refer to that now because I just think it's easier. So
okay.
The father that the VP was supposed to have killed,
mm-hmm,
wakes up in like the layer of the emperor and all of his ninja guys.
Yeah.
And they basically explain to him what their evil plot is. And they have made this type of cocaine that is 5 times more addictive than regular cocaine. And the father's like, okay, well, what does that have to do with like the church or Christianity? And the emperor explains to him that if people are addicted to cocaine, then they'll need to get like self-help from the church. And so that's their big moneymaker.
I know. So yeah, the plot is get people addicted to coke so they'll go to church.
Yep. And so that's their evil plot.
Yeah. And then Doug and
Carol
go to like fight them, right? Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't turn into a, so then he, then his brother Sam is there, and then they have the most depressing flashback where the reason Sam turns evil is because his parents just ignore him and they only like Doug.
Yeah. So then he just turns into a ninja.
Yes.
That is out to destroy the church.
Yeah. It also destroyed Doug. And yeah. Then Doug like kills him, I guess. And so then he kills him, and then he's like beating up people, and someone like stabs Carol, and he turns into the T-Rex, and then what is honestly one of the greatest combat scenes ever filmed. A man flailing around a paper mache T-Rex costume attacking people was beautiful.
Yes. And the best part about it was when Carol was killed, there's all these ninjas in the back just like getting really emotional about it.
I love that. They're crying.
Yeah, they're just like in the back crying, but not like trying to attack Doug. They're just like letting him have his moment.
So they have his moment and they're crying. And then I was thinking, like, this is the best time to attack him and kill him.
Yeah.
While he is doing that. And then he turns into the velociraptor, to a T-Rex, and kills all of them. Then like the head ninja guy comes and he goes in to attack, right? And he like shoots him with an arrow that's like an antibody, like an anti-venom, but his hand is immune.
Yes. So then, he uses his hand to rip the Emperor's head off.
And the dummy head they use is fantastic.
It's just
a generic dummy head with like just some like feathers like glued to it to look like eyebrows and white hair.
Yeah, imagine like the quality of a cheap baby doll.
Yes.
This head.
It was so funny. And then cut to the hospital after he kills the bad guy, and Carol's fine. And they leave to go fight crime.
Yeah.
And that's the end of this movie. It's phenomenal. And it was a top tier low budget movie. It was funny and knew exactly what it was. And it is a
great concept.
Phenomenon. Yeah. And as you'll learn, it was all inspired by autocorrect. Yeah. Yeah. So now we're going to jump into the interview.
This is Wine, Dine, and Storytime. I'm Nydia.
I'm Dana.
I'm Cindy.
And we're your hosts.
Have you ruined a family gathering by asking what wine pairs well with eating a husband?
Are you the CEO of TMI? Have you ever been kicked under the table because you brought up your favorite dinner topic, atrocities throughout history? Then this podcast is perfect for you.
Each week, Dana and I share stories based on topics that include true crime, historical shenanigans, unexplained mysteries, and all things fascinating, while our amateur chef, Cindy, prepares themed dinners and pairs wines based on those topics.
Find us, the Wine, Dine, and Storytime podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a follow.
Hey guys, we're back and we have a very special guest with us today. It's Brendan Steer. He is the writer and director of the movie sensation Velocipastor. So welcome, Brendan, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey guys, nice to be here. I'm Brendan. nice to be on the podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. I'm a very big fan of the Velocipastor. I'm actually just a huge fan of low budget indie movies and just bad movies in general. The first like movie that got me into that was what was it called? It was like Heart of the Dragon or something. It was this like Chinese movie that was dubbed in English. And I have a really, really good feeling that instead of dubbing it in English, there's like, what if we just say random shit and like no one's gonna fact check this.
Right.
Yeah. It was a wild film with I just can't imagine Bruce Lee signed up to play the role that he played with the American dub. I can't imagine that he was saying that dialogue in real life.
Yeah. I love movies that are like that, that will have just, you know, in the 70s, a lot, they would 60s.
Hey, you're cutting out.
In the 70s. They would just not shoot a lot of foreign films. So
hey, Brendan, you cut out.
Dub it for any territory. Yes.
You cut
I'm here
out.
Now.
You want to try to actually turn the video off, see if that fixes the lag?
Yeah, because right. I'm lagging a little bit here.
Yeah, just I'll do that.
Okay.
Stop
video.
Yeah, all right. So there we go. I think that should lag less. All right, so... Sorry about that.
I was just going to say, I love sort of the weird disconnect that comes with movies that are dubbed, like just full stop, where all of them, I don't know, there was a series of movies in the 70s where they would just not shoot sound, and so every territory would just dub them with whatever their language was. The whole point was to move faster, And I've always wanted to just take one of those movies and just dub something completely different on top of it. Because it's just sort of a blank slate, you know? Like, yeah. Like these poor people don't know what you're going to do with it. And yeah, no, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I love films like that.
So just like the backstory also to this Heart of Dragon film is my friend and I were up in Vermont and we were trying to watch this movie. So we find this unopened movie, right? It said Shanghai Noon. That's a great movie. It's Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson, I think. So like, great, we're going to watch Shanghai Noon. We open the container and then underneath the paper thing is a box that says Shanghai Nights. I'm like, oh, also a great movie. And then we open that and the disc says Heart of Dragon. And this was a sealed DVD.
Incredible. Honestly, that is the best way you could have seen Heart of Dragon. I feel like that's one thing, you know, I am very happy for streaming services and stuff. Do not get me wrong. But one of my favorite things about physical media is that it's that like you'll stumble across them sometimes and be like, sorry, what the fuck is this? and it that's much harder to do online, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
the closest you used to be able to do that was when you were like pirating music from Napster or some shit, and it would just be like, you'd be like, get this Metallica song, and then 10 seconds in, you're like, this isn't Metallica, and I have no idea what this is, but it is now in my music library forever.
Does Velocipaster exist anywhere physically? Is there a DVD or anything?
Oh, yeah, we got a DVD and Blu-ray out. Awesome. And in fact, there was a very brief run of VHS tapes that was made for us by a company in New York. And I'm talking very limited run. I think there were like 30 or 40 of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? they also kind of sort of stole the cover art from something because it was on that one. So truly, truly collector's items. I have one and I am very happy with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, now I just need to get a VHS player.
Good luck.
You might be able to get a VHS DVD hybrid player. That's what we have.
Mm, true, true.
I don't think you get just a VHS anymore.
It's a shame, honestly. I love VHS, and it's weird that actually at this moment in my life that I don't have a VHS player. I don't know. It looks like garbage, and I like that about it. I have the original Blair Witch Project on VHS.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and it's a perfect movie for that format. Like, I love that film, but I saw a Blu-ray of it in the store the other day, and my only thought was, like, fucking why? it actually would be worse on Blu-ray, I think. Like, having the graininess and having the sort of, like, I don't know, washed out mess of it is so much of the fun of that movie that you can't really see it. Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting thought. Because, I mean, I feel like especially with a found footage film, you don't want it to look good. You want it to look really crappy.
Exactly. I really want to do a found footage film in a this format called Mini DV, which is sort of one of the last analog formats before everything went digital. And you can still get Mini DVs. And it just looks like shit. it's not a pretty format, but there's something so violent and gross about it. Like, it's hard to make it not look like a snuff film, you know? and so I'm just sort of like, I don't know, that's scary. And I want to make a scary found footage movie with that at hopefully sometime soon.
You should use whatever camera happens to be the only camera that can possibly catch Bigfoot on film, because that thing is garbage.
Yes. That's exactly what I need.
Flip phone or like...
Yeah, someone's like, like the very first Nokia flip phone.
Yeah.
The video can only record for like 5 seconds before your memory filled.
That was actually so funny thing. The first films I made weren't from a phone, but they were from an early digital camera. And a digital camera intended for photographs, you know. And it could only record for I think 90 seconds at a time, like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And that was how I started making movies, was on that thing. Wow. So it's truly, that there's something to that. There's something
to bunch of TikToks together.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I don't want to say it made me the filmmaker I am today, but but it was fun. I loved doing those weird backyard movies.
I mean, I used to do those things with my friends. One of my friends actually is in he's not really in the film industry anymore. He works for just growing up. He always wanted to make movies. So I'm a terrible actor, but I was always cast because he lived up the street from me. But yeah, so I know how fun it is to make those low budget things.
Yeah, that's the way you do it, man. That's truly, I am that guy, from my friend group, where I would cast all my friends too. It's they're there and they are willing. And that is all you need when you're 14.
Oh, and, exactly.
Trying to make a war film in your backyard.
Yeah.
Honestly, in a lot of ways, I think that is what I was trying to recapture in Velocipastor, that kind of backyard movie energy. And that was really, I think, the point of it, I guess, because it was sort of I don't know, those films were just so fun to both make and watch, because you would watch them back and be this is quite a Vietnam here, when it's pine trees in Pennsylvania.
I actually love how you did that, how it's the same woods for everywhere, like China, wherever you're supposed to be in America, and then Vietnam.
It's it's woods, it's fucking woods. And that is exactly what I was trying to do. It's that's what I did as a kid too. There were that we would just we discovered for a lot of history projects, for some reason, they would allow us occasionally to submit short films to for a grade, for extra credit or something.
Yeah.
And so as soon as my friends and I realized that, we just went off a shot and made 30 short films that are all about World War II and Vietnam was a couple of them. It was, the Korean War was one. It was all this war shit, because we just had old fake muskets, and I was cool, that's basically what they had in World War II, right? we did very well on those, honestly.
That's awesome. Out of curiosity, so what's your favorite low budget movie that you're not a part of?
That's good. Or well, no, that
so
is
give me
not
give me good and bad, because so for example,
okay,
I like watching low budget movies. I watched Lamageddon the other night, and that was fun, but it was just by all means a terrible movie. I'm not gonna pretend it was good, but I enjoyed it.
right exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's a tough question, because there's so many films I've seen now where I almost forget that they're low budget, because they loom so large in my imagination. Where it's something like The Room is first and foremost a perfect movie, but but also that's a $2.5 million film. It's is that low budget? I don't know.
I think certainly hard to say, because you made The Velocipastor, which I'd say is overall more entertaining intentionally for 30K?
Yeah, 35.
So I don't know. I'd say that's a medium budget movie.
And that's how I look at it. But the fact of the matter is, anything under $1 million is still considered ultra low by industry standards. And so, okay, a good low budget movie I saw recently is The Lake Michigan Monster.
Ooh, what's that?
It's a film that I ended up meeting the filmmakers, so now I can say they're my friends. But, we played at the same film festival together, and I saw the trailer to their film, and it just totally fucking blew me away. They made it for no money, but one of the co-directors is a CGI artist, and he was the he was the head of special effects on a couple of Baz Luhrmann's films, and so he knows what he's doing, obviously. Yeah. But it's basically, I saw somebody on the back of the box describe it as a live action episode of SpongeBob somehow. And that's kind of what it is. It's sort of like a monster movie mixed with like Wes Anderson mixed with, yeah, a kind of SpongeBob aesthetic of like just throwing strange visuals at you and bizarre shit happening. And they pulled that thing together for like under $15,000, which is astounding to me. Yeah, and it's really fucking good. It's like really good and really funny and just endlessly entertaining. And they just came out on Arrow Video this year. So Arrow also does not usually release new movies. They usually just restore older things. So I think it's a cult film waiting to happen kind of with us. And I loved that film.
That's awesome. I'm going to check that out.
While we're talking about budget, Brendan, I just have... Yeah. So when you have such a low budget, how do you decide what to prioritize? And in particular... Mm-hmm. I want to know how much that dinosaur costume was. That was fucking incredible. I need to know where you got that.
All right. So first, when you have that low of a budget, what are you prioritizing? First and foremost, safety, of course. And like beyond the basics, like food, lodging, safety, things like that. What I prioritize are the actors, because if you're working with a budget that low, honestly, the only thing that's going to save your film are the actors. It's worth investing in people that are trained, that know what they're doing, that can deliver dialogue with a straight face. Like that is important. And honestly, that will save your film. That will kind of make or break it, honestly. Mm-hmm. That, sorry about that. I don't know what my phone just went weird for a second. Anyway, prioritize the actors is what I would say. Mm-hmm. Now, the dinosaur costume. So funny thing about that, I have no idea how much it cost, actually, because I did not buy it. So it's a little bit of a story. When I was in high school, mm-hmm. I was the head of my high school film club. And one year we happened to get budget and we had decided to do a remake of this 1970s movie called The Last Dinosaur. So The Last Dinosaur was just this really awful 1970s movie. And it was just about like hunting down sort of a lost world kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And our teacher advisor, an actual real adult, decided to buy us this dinosaur costume with Pennsylvania tax money.
And, oh my God.
And I don't know how much it cost. They delivered it to my house. And the next morning, before we were going to start filming, the principal of the high school came in and told us that we couldn't shoot The Last Dinosaur because it was too violent. And he did not ask for the costume back. So I did not give him the costume back. And it just stayed in my basement for about a decade until we shot the Velocipaster. And so it is, in fact, built for a high school student. And it is very claustrophobic and hard to use. But I genuinely have no idea how much it cost. I really don't.
Wow.
But it's just such a brilliant prop.
Yeah. I just love the idea that this pastor not only turns into a dinosaur, but like a paper mache dinosaur.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, let's be real, it's the least threatening costume like humanly possible. It looks like a fun friend. Yeah. and so when it was time to actually shoot the movie, I was like, I mean there's only really one thing we can do for it, because I knew I wasn't going to use CGI. That totally mm-hmm. defeats the purpose of a movie like this, in my opinion. So mm-hmm. It is still in my basement. It is directly to my left right now. So yeah.
Well, if you ever need Bigfoot, Emmy has a great Bigfoot costume for when she was like in middle school.
I do.
Go on. just because
you got to tell about the Bigfoot video you made, and maybe even send it to him.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
The one on YouTube.
There's more than one.
oh yes. So I actually have family in Pennsylvania as well, but they had in their local paper one day that
someone had seen a quote juvenile Bigfoot, which to me sounds like a fucking bear, but whatever.
Sure, probably is.
But so my sister and I got this Bigfoot costume and decided that we were going to make a video of this Bigfoot and put it on YouTube and like try to go viral because hell people yeah. had actually seen it. So I'll have to send you the YouTube video, but it is pretty incredible. And the best thing about it, I think, are the comments, like, nice white shoes, asshole. Or
like, could you imagine like if me? It really was Bigfoot, though? And yeah, somebody I mean, just like, saw Bigfoot and was like, hey, nice fucking Nikes. Like,
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, me and my tennis shoes and the Bigfoot costume, like, just strutting along.
That is the way to do it, man. Yeah. That's incredible. I'm so happy that there are multiple Bigfoot videos that you had to sort of
I had to specify.
Yeah. I only knew about one of them.
Yeah,
there are more to come.
Yeah, oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, you never get rid of that stuff. Like in your house, you should never get rid of a good costume. Is my thought. Like,
oh, for sure not. Except, growing up, I was a serial killer once, and I was a cereal box with a knife in it. And thank God for that costume, because there's no way in hell I fit in that now. I was like 10 or 12, 10 or 11. I would be in pain if I put that thing on.
Yeah, but you might one day encounter a 10 or 11 year old child and be like, use this. I need you to wear this for something.
That's true.
I it's actually a funny thing. I just saw in the other day in New York, they closed down the store where we got all the Velocipastor costumes.
Oh, is it the the place in Manhattan that like
Halloween Adventure that was where I got all the pre-stuff.
Fun fact, so my friend who I said now works so he used to go to NYU and was in the film school, and one time I was just hanging out with him and he was like filming, so they had to make like a fake sitcom, so we went in there to buy like the most horrific looking like prop, and the joke was that like everyone just thought it was normal, this little like demon thing was like living with the family.
Yeah, that's fun. That store was amazing.
Yeah, that's a really crazy. I know what you're talking about. It was massive, especially for Manhattan.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was truly. I think I got. I think every film I've done, I got a prop there. Well, every film that needed, you know, horror shit.
Yeah.
Where it was like, I don't know. Oh, we need a skeleton with horns here. Cool. Yeah, that was the place to go. I went to the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan.
Yeah.
I went to SVA. So I lived there for 5-6 years. Yeah. Or at least in New York City I did.
Mm-hmm.
Did the classic Brooklyn hop at some point.
Yeah.
Because Manhattan prices are rough. I miss New York sometimes, but I don't miss the cost of living. So.
Oh yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah.
It's going down though. That's the only real upside of COVID, is that rent is tanking a lot of places.
Yeah. I am hopefully going to try and get to a bigger place on the West Coast as well. Cause you know what the thing is, especially after like a year in quarantine. Alone, I live alone. So after like a year of solo quarantine with my cat, I'm like, you know what I really want? Rooms. Like more than one room.
Yeah.
That I can just sort of be like, hey, this is a room to work in, and this is a room to watch TV in. And you know, that's what I want. So hopefully within the next year I'll be able to upgrade to a place with more than one.
Yes.
So, but it is funny too. Speaking of that, there was at one point during all of this when the film was going viral, I Googled myself, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how they have the autofill thing that'll pop up? Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Mine popped up Brendan Steer net worth. And I was like, it's not that much, guys. It's like, I don't know, a couple of $100 maybe. but I just thought it was very, I feel like I finally have made it when people want to know how much
I've
made. So it was.
The fact that you're Googleable at all is a great
thing. Yeah, no, it's true. It's very true. It's
that's a good start.
Yeah, and it feels weird to say like it's an honor, but it is to an extent. There's a part of me that's like, holy shit, yeah, that's really incredible, especially in comparison to, like, you know, I didn't think the Velocipaster was going to be the one that blew up necessarily. So I'm very happy in some ways it was. I'm happy it was the dumb dinosaur one. claim to fame.
That's the nice thing though, is because you can only go up from here. If like you made like cinematic masterpiece on $30,000, then like shit, I gotta top this. We'll make a really fun movie that knows exactly what it is. It's like, yeah, if people love it, you can go any direction you want.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. It's so funny because I have so many scripts that I just have completed because I write very fast. I wrote the screenplay to Velocipaster in 2 days.
Oh my God.
that's real. I think I touched it up once afterwards, but I write very quickly. And so I have all of these screenplays, and now I'm, you know, just in that odd position where I've risen to some degree of prominence during the one time in history that you cannot shoot. which is just very frustrating. But that's hopefully in 21.
But I mean, if you're writing, you can grind them all out as soon as this is over.
Mm-hmm. That's the plan.
All right. So the meeting's about to end. I'm just going to send you guys a new link, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure.
With free Zoom. Yeah. So.
Hell yeah, dude. No. I blame you zero at all. There's so many services that I am just sort of like, yeah, I ain't paying for that shit.
I know.
So I get it, truly.
If we had like legit sponsorships, then I'd be like, sure, I'll pay like $150 a year for Zoom. But like with no money, it's like $150. Fuck that.
No, truly, it's like, what's the point? One of the only things I like about subscription services is when you can do the month to month and just cancel it when you don't need it.
Oh yeah.
Like I edit on the Adobe suite, and Adobe's programs are really good, but God, they fucking gouge you for that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're paying for the whole suite, you're paying like, Christ, dude, like $200-$300 a month.
Oh my God. It's a lot of money.
I know. And so let's, you know, it's $20 to $40 per month for Premiere. It's $20 per month for Photoshop. And that's without After Effects. That's without any of that. You're already banking like $60 to $80. And it's like per month is a lot. So I don't know. I get it. I cancel that shit whenever I'm not actually working on
a project. I don't blame you.
Yeah, because truly, what's the point? It's like you're just throwing away money at that point. And I also have that mentality for gaming, where I hate paying for like the PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live.
Yeah.
Thank you. I prefer console gaming, and I have to go to PC, so I don't pay that.
I know. I mean, for me on Xbox, I just pay for Game Pass because I occasionally play games. But then it turns out I just play Madden all day, and it's like why am I paying for this if all I'm gonna do is just play Madden? I mean, just controversial opinion. Everyone's like, Madden 21 is the worst. I love Madden 21. It's my favorite Madden game. I don't know what's wrong with everyone. They're like, this game sucks. It's like, no, dude, it's the best.
Yeah, I saw people saying the same thing about, I was interested in the new FIFA. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it had like 2.5 stars on Amazon or something. And all the reviews were like that. And honestly, I feel like, I don't know. Is it a soccer game? That's really what I want. If it's a soccer game and it works, I'm kind of happy with that.
I know. It's like for me, this is, I don't know if our fans are even interested in this topic, but it's like, for me, everyone's like, this is the worst game ever. It's like, yeah, they updated the roster. They added new animations. So like you can break tackles and stuff. And they added our actual pass rush feature. That's all I needed. I didn't need you to like make me an actual GM for the NFL. I don't need to like handling drug tests and stuff. I just want to sit down and play Madden for like a couple hours a day and forget about COVID.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's like, it is funny. I was talking to a friend of mine recently about just that sort of, she said something really interesting to me, which was that the problem with how people react to media now is that the default question is what's wrong with it, mm-hmm. as opposed to what do you like about it?
Yeah.
And I think that she actually has a point with that, where it is sort of like, I feel like everybody's always scrambling for a hot take that mm-hmm. you can kind of like condense down into a tweet and or a YouTube video or something like that. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, art and video games and music or movies that matters are things that stick with you, that you remember and you change your mind about, you know, mm-hmm. like you turn it over in your brain later and you're like this, oh, actually I feel this way about it now that I'm a little older or something. And I don't know, I feel like in general, that sort of discussions about things like that are being condensed down to a tomato meter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just too bad, because I think that there's a lot of things in between that are kind of hard to quantify. That is sort of like, kind of like before when you asked, you know, what's a good low budget and what's a bad low budget mm-hmm. film? It's like, yeah, I don't get me wrong, I totally get the question, because there's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also something to be said for, like, once again, to use the example of The Room, like, it is kind of a great film. Oh, from a certain point of view, it's like, it's memorable as fuck.
When I said, like, when I watched like Llama again the other night, it's like a terrible movie, but I really enjoyed it. They had a real llama playing the llama.
That's great. Hell yeah.
My favorite thing is they clearly blew their budget on the one helicopter scene at the beginning and then hiring a llama to act, because like after that the budget was gone, and I was like, this is hysterical, like what a poor allocation of funds. There's a helicopter in one scene.
and it's like, whenever you see that, I love that there becomes almost like a second narrative in your head of like, what were they spending? Like, why? What led to these decisions that you were like, no, fuck it, we want the llama. we don't need them to eat. I don't know. I love that stuff.
I guess sorry I meant that question is like, I meant more like a low budget movie that's actually bad that you enjoyed, and a low budget movie that's like you enjoyed and it's good.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's totally. Movies that are like, I love Troll 2. I think that's one of my top.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That might be my favorite movie ever. That's a genuinely all around bad movie, but it's really, really funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it truly is like, it is so memorable, you know? Like it actually, in terms of like giving you an experience that is enjoyable and that you remember and that you're happy about, it mm-hmm. succeeds.
Oh, just, for sure.
Just not in the way it intended, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I think that's the interesting thing, where there's sort of, once you make a movie, you cannot control how the audience will react, period. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's just completely out of your hands. And I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting that things like Troll 2 can have a totally second life beyond what the filmmaker intended.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of that, Brendan, kind of going off on a totally different topic, but I've heard that Velocipastor has kind of taken on a new meaning in Spain. Can you tell us about that?
So it's a funny thing, and I don't know how true this is anymore, but there was a moment in time when we were going viral back in 2019 mm-hmm. that Spain was having its presidential elections. And one of the candidates was this very far right figure who happened to be an ex-priest. And a very reputable Spanish newspaper was posting an opinion article about the election. And the journalist was like, compared him to this trailer she saw that morning called the Velocipastor, and she thinks that this dude is the real Velocipastor, and so they gave him that nickname in the Spanish press.
That's incredible.
for a couple hot month or so where all I would get on the Twitter feed were all these people that were like, what is this trailer? And then all these people being like, if the far right rises in Spain, we're going to have it. It's just very weird.
That's incredible.
And but yeah, it is truly like that. It, another place that we've blown up even bigger than Spain that I just truly did not expect is we are huge in Brazil.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't totally know why, to be honest with you. I think it just happened to strike some kind of chord down there with them. But yeah, I've gotten a lot of them. I should probably start learning Portuguese because they really adored the film down there.
That's awesome.
To have them. Yeah. Has
it, I mean, are there like Portuguese subtitles?
Yes. There are fan subs everywhere. There's the one actually. The one language that we were fan subbed in that I can't. Every once in a while, there is an Arabic cut of Velocipaster that gets uploaded to YouTube. And I don't know who in the Middle East was like, I need Velocipaster, but they are very tenacious about keeping it on YouTube. And I have to copyright strike it like every month. So you know what? On the one hand, power to them, and on the other hand, please stop posting my movie. But yeah, there are fan subs of it out in Portuguese. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, the fact that there are fan subs period, I'm still kind of blown away by. So yeah. So I'm very happy with obviously what it's done.
Yeah
it's so insane.
Actually, I know you say you write a lot of scripts. I have a script idea to pitch you here. So
go
a while with of, it. I think on our third episode we talked about do you know who Denver Riggleman is?
No, I actually do not.
He is a congressman in Virginia.
Okay.
Who,
oh, no.
No, but hear me out. So I'm not going to talk about his Bigfoot porn addiction. Okay, we'll get so basically, this an aside is, so during this election that he had, there's a legitimate scandal that came up where by his opponent, where he was posting pictures of Bigfoot with like a giant penis on his like public Instagram with his like face photoshopped on it. And he's writing a book about Bigfoot reproduction, right? But that's not what I'm talking about. So he was in the process of writing a book before he got elected that he has ceased to finish about JFK being assassinated because of Bigfoot. And I'm thinking, what if we have a film where Bigfoot is in the CIA and is pretending to be in the mafia to assassinate JFK?
I mean, yes, that's a good movie.
Yes.
I love the presupposition, too, that Bigfoot is just part of the CIA. Like, you go to work and there's Mr. Bigfoot sitting at his desk and you're like, hey, John, hey, Bigfoot. And you just keep going through the office.
Okay. All it says, if you make this.
Yes.
Just have our logo somewhere so we get like
yes. I would absolutely, well, I mean, obviously that's the crest.
Or actually, or involve us. Emmy already has the Bigfoot costume.
It's true. I mean, first and foremost that. Second of all, I think that it would have to be, you know, if Bigfoot's at the CIA, obviously this is like a Hellboy situation where there's like a secret team at the CIA with Bigfoot on it.
I almost feel like he should just be in the office and no one really acknowledges. Like no one acknowledges the entire film.
So good. I do love that idea.
This goes by like John or something. Like
yes.
Maybe he has like a mustache and a hat, and just no one really notices that he's Bigfoot.
Yeah, it's just such a good disguise, you know. I mean, the CIA is one of the best in the world at that.
Yeah. He's like the best sniper for the CIA.
Yeah, that reminds me of Octopus Dad.
Oh, Octodad? Have you ever played Octodad?
Yeah.
No.
Oh my god, it's the best game. So it's a game where it's a video game where you're pretending to be a dad. So you're pretending, okay. So you're an octopus who's pretending to be a dad.
Hell yeah.
And you have to just like go, you have to like go to the grocery store. There's like simple tasks, like go to the grocery store and you control each limb. And there's a game mode that's two player where one person controls like, where it's like arms, legs, right?
Yeah.
One person controls like the arms, one person controls the legs or like whatever. There's this one game mode where it randomizes. So like we were playing this once, we were like pretty, like we were intoxicated, we were playing this and it randomly switches. So like all of a sudden I'll no longer be the right arm. I'll control the leg. It is the silliest game. I love Octodad.
That's incredible. Yeah. I Damn, what a good idea for a game too.
I know.
You know, it's funny. I wish there was a more identifiable Pennsylvania cryptid, you know? Because I feel like America, yeah, we got Bigfoot, but I want like a particularly Pennsylvania woods,
yeah,
spooky thing.
Yeah,
the closest we have is in Centralia.
What's that?
Oh, Centralia is it's what they base Silent Hill on. Weirdly, this is real. It's a town in the middle of Pennsylvania, about 5 hours from where my parents live. And there was I want to say the 60s or 70s, there was a really horrible coal mining accident, and all of the coal sheets underneath the town lit on fire.
Oh, I actually know that.
Yeah, where they are still burning to this day. And so you can go to Centralia and it's just totally a ghost town now. And it's dangerous to be there for any real period of time because there's carbon monoxide coming up from the ground from all the stuff burning underneath it. And it's really, it's sort of like, it has that gorgeousness that only empty places have, you know, like if you go to an abandoned building or something and it's like weirdly kind of beautiful, it's like a whole ghost town of that just in the middle of PA.
Oh, wow.
And that's the closest thing we have. That's like our sort of boogeyman story, I guess. But even then, it's like, there's not a cool monster though. Like, give me a cool monster, guys.
a squonk from Pennsylvania. I'm looking.
What was that?
The squonk.
The squonk?
Yes, it is. Okay. So the squonk is, it basically looks like a giant slug with legs.
What?
And whoa!
How do you spell this?
Like,
how do you spell this?
It looks so sad. It's S-Q-U-O-N-K.
I'm looking up the squonk as well.
Oh my god, this thing looks really depressed.
Northern
Pennsylvania. Oh, I kind of like the squonk. Never mind. Okay.
Like Eeyore.
Oh, he's so sad. Okay. Never mind. I love the squonk. Happy that's ours. What a perfectly Pennsylvanian cryptid. Just kind of sad and just kind of sluggish.
I mean, we're not that much better. New York, our cryptids are all like knockoff. We have like two or three that are knockoffs of Nessie. And we have sewer gators, and that's pretty much it.
Right, right.
And sewer gators.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in the US, it's pretty much you got Jersey Devil and you got Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Those are like the good ones.
Yeah.
you guys talk about cryptids a bunch, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, a fair amount.
What do you have favorites? Do you guys have teams you're on?
I mean, we have least favorites. I absolutely hate. I have tried so many times, Renan, to like research a chupacabra, and I'm like, this is stupid, and I quit like halfway through.
Sorry, say again. You dropped out a sec.
Oh, I said I've tried so many times to research the chupacabra, and then halfway through, I'm like, this is the stupidest cryptid. I hate this.
Yeah, it just basically eats sheep, right? Like that's the whole thing.
It just sucks their blood.
Yeah, what a loser.
I know, it's like, who cares?
Get it together, chupacabra.
I know.
Come on, dude. What about you, Emmy? Do you have one?
Yeah, Mothman is my nemesis.
Oh,
we've talked about this so many times on our show, but I for some reason have this irrational fear of moths. And
oh, interesting.
Mothman is just not my dude.
He's just a big moth, right? Basically.
He doesn't really look like a moth.
But he is scared of light. So like, why the hell is he a mothman? Moths like the light.
He's more of like a bird man than anything else.
Or like a man bat. I wouldn't call him a bat man, but man bat perhaps. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of that. I like Bigfoot, I think. I think Bigfoot's the way to go. The Jersey Devil's wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, I'm looking at the squonk right now. its whole story is that it's a mythical creature that's so ugly that's why it's hidden, and it spends most of its time crying.
my God.
That's so sad.
Who came up with that?
Oh, I want to give the squonk a big old hug. Now I'm just sort of like, you know, I feel bad for making fun of the squonk now. Yeah. It seems like just a cute little creature.
Time.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite cryptid, Brendan?
I kind of like the Fresno Nightcrawler.
What is the Fresno Nightcrawler?
It's just like this kind of weird, it's sort of hard to describe. They're like big ol', it's in California.
Oh,
and they,
whoa.
Yeah, they basically look like weird pairs of legs that just sort of like run around. There's video footage of it, and they're just honestly eerie. Like, they're one of the few cryptids that I'm like, wow, that is actually pretty fucking creepy.
That is wild.
Yeah, because it's like the footage out there is like real enough that you're like, I know this is something, but I don't know what this something is. Because it doesn't really move like an animal. They're wild. Eerie. Yeah.
Cool.
I definitely, earlier, to try and escape quarantine earlier this year, I took a brief one night vacation to Joshua Tree, and I got an Airbnb out there that was like the coolest Airbnb I've ever fucking been in. And I was just sort of alone in the desert, and I was kind of like, hell yeah. And I get why people see aliens and shit out here, because it's just so totally alien in the environment to sort of anything else around. Yeah. It's interesting. It's like you're on the moon for a night or something. It's very weird. So I think that there is something creepy about the desert, and I don't know how to dramatize it yet, because I think it would be really fun to do a movie like that.
Yeah, I mean, Skinwalker Ranch is like a whole thing. There's like a lot to it, to the point where it's like, you know, like the do you know, like the story of like the original story of Skinwalkers before it got like tainted by aliens and stuff?
I actually don't know if I do.
So basically, like, I don't know it perfectly, but just from what I remember, it's basically, according to like the old Native American legends, the Skinwalkers were these like demon-like creatures that pretty much like chase you, and if they get you, you're done. And like, as more modern folklore says, like, if you're driving through Skinwalker Ranch, these things will like chase you, and they can go faster than as fast as your car, and if you stop, they get you.
Oof, love that. Love that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more to it now. Like, it's been built upon with aliens and stuff, but like way back when, it was just like, these are demons that like terrorize Native Americans.
Yeah. Well, good name too. I mean, I feel like that's half the battle with the cryptid.
Oh yeah.
It's like, give it a good name. And then all of a sudden it'll be like, hell yeah. Like that's Skinwalker. Ugh. Yeah. Already good.
Yeah, I know. That's a awesome name.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, just going back to Velocipaster now, how did you come up with the Velocipaster?
Well, I can tell you, Emmy, it was an autocorrect. This is real. So it was film school. I was in SVA, like I said, and we had to do an assignment just to make a short film. It was like a very open-ended assignment. We had to shoot it on 16mm. That was sort of the parameters of it. Mm-hmm. And I was texting my friend about dinosaurs, as one does.
Oh yeah.
And my phone auto-corrected Velociraptor to Velocispacepaster.
Wow.
And I looked down at my phone, and in 2011 I was like, man, that sounds like a fucking movie. and so I ended up making, for a short film, the Velocipaster. It was a fake trailer, because back then that was still kind of very new to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be a fun idea. So my other thought after that sounds like a movie was, I can finally use the dinosaur costume. So that was how it happened. I made the short film of it. It's like 3 minutes, maybe. I think it's still up on my YouTube. But
oh, gotta check that out.
Yeah, it was the first thing I ever made that got any sort of attention. Like, it was sort of when the rest of the videos on my YouTube had like 100 views, this one all of a sudden shot up to like, you know, 20,000-30,000, and it was the kind of thing where I was like, oh my god, I've done it. And I tried to kickstart it a couple of times, failed every time, and ended up making a different feature, and then circling back around because I couldn't stop thinking of fun ideas for the fucking Velocipaster. So it haunted me, but in the way only a good idea can. So yeah, that was how I came up with the title. It was a mistake that awesome. I somehow, I don't know, saw the fun in.
That's so funny, because when Steve texted me like, hey, have you seen the Velocipaster? I was like, oh, Steve, like, you spelled Velociraptor wrong. Like, yep. Oh, that's so funny. I was like making fun of him, and he's like, no, actually, like, that's the movie.
Yep. Yeah, it is funny to me too that we've had so much international attention based on an English language pun. Yeah. Like, I don't know how Velocipaster translates to Japanese. I really don't. I imagine they call it like Mr. Priest Dinosaur. I don't know. But it is an idea with more universal reach than I ever thought possible.
Yeah. So I actually have a question that I figure you're the man to ask, because you're the genius behind this. So like, when Doug turns into a dinosaur, right?
Uh-huh.
And so let's say, like, what's her name? I can't think of her name right now. What's his like girlfriendy person's name? What's her name?
Carol.
Yeah, her. So let's say like they're gonna have a baby at some point.
Yes.
Is the baby a half dinosaur? And what if he transforms halfway through? Does he have like a cloaca, like a lizard?
Well, these are a lot of important questions.
Like, how does reproduction work? And like, was he laying an egg? Does he turn into a female dinosaur and lay the egg? Like, these are questions I have.
Yeah, no, and these are all very good questions, honestly. In my brain, the way it works is that it's sort of like a werewolf thing, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, all right, so if you're a werewolf and you impregnate a woman, I don't think she'd give birth to a wolf baby, would she? I don't know.
But will the baby hatch out of an egg?
Now that is more possible. That is actually much more likely. So perhaps the egg. I think he has a penis. I have never asked Greg, but I'll shoot him a text after this and make sure. And yeah, I think that I am going to say that. I think that maybe she lays an egg.
Okay.
Maybe she lays an egg.
That's a satisfactory answer.
You know, that's the mystery of the creative process. You just don't know until you're confronted with these questions.
That's a matter for Velocipaster too.
Yeah,
it's true. True.
Reddit, if you ever have any, if you need someone to do world building for you, hit me up. My brain goes to some really stupid places, so I can really I can really build this world out for you.
Oh, it's perfect.
You can be like, hey, what kind of car would he drive? I'm like, I don't know. Like a Chevy?
Like a Chevy. Yep, that's it. My favorite thing about it is that he's sort of just a low-rent superhero. Like, he's not a great superhero, but he can get it done.
Yeah.
In a Chevy, he gets one of those new hybrid cars. He cares about the environment, you know.
He drives a smart car.
Yeah, he's totally useless once transformed, but
stuck in the car he transforms.
But it'll get him within a stone's throw of where he needs to go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
Oh man,
it's true. Yeah. Yeah, it's also funny because another thing with sort of I guess cryptids and sort of haunted America that I really am interested in are kind of like ghost stories of the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the internet's connected us all in such a way that we're able to kind of know everything happening in the world all at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is something that's never been true in human history up to this point. Mm-hmm. And if you like scrounge through the internet, there's just some weird shit that happens in our world. And I love finding those kind of like weird cul-de-sacs of where everybody pools all their resources and goes, yeah, I don't fucking know what happened, man. It's like kind of cool to find those things yeah. that still we can't explain.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So another thing we can't explain is, you know, there's a Pinocchio cinematic universe.
I'm sorry?
You know, did you hear that, right? There's a Pinocchio yes. cinematic universe.
I did not know this.
Okay. So I am... I don't even know how the hell we got on this topic. This was a random... This is where my brain goes sometimes, but we were...
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are we talking about, Emmy? During our Christmas special, where yeah. I discovered the...
I think we were just talking about weird Christmas movies.
Oh, no, it wasn't even, because I didn't even know Pinocchio Christmas existed until well after. But there's a Pinocchio in space. There's a Pinocchio slasher film. There's a Pinocchio Soviet musical, which sounds like hell on earth. There's a Pinocchio and the Dark Emperor. There's like a whole cinematic universe of Pinocchio.
Pinocchio and the Dark Emperor. What the fuck? I had no idea the stakes were so high in Pinocchio.
I know.
I thought he was just a puppet that wanted to be a boy. That is wild.
Yeah. So we're gonna dive into that. At least oh my God. We're gonna at least watch Pinocchio in space.
What a journey that'll be for you guys.
I know.
Yeah. For the election, my best friend and I, we were too stressed out to actually watch it live.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did was I was hanging out with him and his wife, and we made a media jar of like punishment where we all wrote down a bad idea of what to watch and put mm-hmm. it in the jar and just shuffled it around. And that was how I watched the last episode of The Big Bang Theory. I have never seen any other episode of it, and wow, what an experience that was. So I also love I guess cinema masochism, so the idea of going through all of the Pinocchio cinematic universe sounds pretty fucking good, honestly. Or at the very least really awful.
The first Pinocchio film ever is actually from the Soviet Russians, and it's a mix of claymation and live action, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to survive that. I might. It's not. There's no English dub. There's no subtitles.
Oh. Yeah. That's when you click through.
Yeah.
you're sort of like, all right, well.
I don't know if I'm going to survive that one. I am excited for the Soviet Pinocchio musical, because I don't know what Russian sounds like when it's sung, but I can't imagine it's very pleasant.
Yeah. I actually, oh my God, I can tell you, because I dated a German woman for a long time, and she grew up with Soviet fairy tale movies
mm-hmm.
That were dubbed in German, but they didn't dub the songs. They just subtitled them.
Uh-huh.
And it is exactly as melodious as the gorgeous language of German. So it's like, you know, it's real odd. those movies were wild, by the way. There was a lot of Baba Yaga shit happening, and they would just be like, they threw Baba Yaga into everything. It was like the national thing of Russia to do that.
But Baba Yaga is insane too, because I started researching this and then I decided I didn't feel like doing that topic. We actually talked about Inuit folklore last week because
ooh, cool.
Pretty interesting. But yeah, so the Baba Yaga is wild, because sometimes the Baba Yaga eats you and sometimes the Baba Yaga helps you. It's just a crapshoot.
No, truly. That's the weirdest thing about it. I think we watched three together. And Baba Yaga was in all of them. And in two of them, she was like a kindly grandmother. And in the other one, she was like the villain. It's so strange. She is like a capricious god that will just sometimes be like, yes, of course I'll help you. And other times be like, time to be a meal. And it's like, Jesus, it's a real roll of the dice with Baba Yaga. I guess that's just Russia in general. It's a real roll of the dice over there.
I love how they didn't even bother creating like a second piece of folklore. They're like, we're going to stick to just Baba Yaga. And she's going to do whatever we need done in this story.
Well, and also she is quite literally like an old woman. Like it's something that there is a dearth of in Russia. So it's just, they're kind of like, always be afraid. Welcome to Russia. Maybe we'll help you. Maybe you die. And it's, they really nailed it with their national cryptid.
I think we're coming up on time.
Yeah, we're coming up on time again. So this is awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so where can people find you and feel free to plug anything you've done and everything.
Yeah. Everybody can find me at Brendan Steer on Instagram, Twitter, all those kind of things. Those are really the only two I use. And if they want to follow updates for the Velocipastor, it's at the Velocipastor as one word.
Mm-hmm.
I am currently in the middle of just sort of trying to get projects off the ground right now. But I just released an album full of real bummer music for people that want to hear that. So they can find that, you know, wherever I'm at. There's also a BrendanSteer.com that I have to update. Jesus, I'm paying for that. I should do that. But yeah, I am around. You can find me at all of that.
All right. Awesome. And make sure to check out the Velocipastor. We usually talk about the TV show Kid Nation, but we're going to talk about Velocipastor instead.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I do believe, I think it is still on Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah, it is. I rewatched it Friday and Emmy watched it yesterday.
Perfect. 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 Yeah. Yes. Awesome. And yeah, there, as I mentioned before, you can get the Blu-ray if you want. And if there are any international listeners out there, the Blu-ray does not have a region, so you can play that wherever you are.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you for coming on.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nikki.
And I'm Tyler.
And we are Page Turners and Button Mashers.
Do you guys love books, games, or even both? Well, we have the podcast for you.
I come in with a book of the week, sometimes a series of books, and give you the tip to tail of the book and based on how many pages turned it was worth.
Then I follow up with a game of the week and give you the ins and outs of what to expect, how many awards, and of course, how much I loved it.
So if you love books,
if you love games,
and if you love witty openings,
then you should totally tune into Page Turners and Button Mashers.
And we're back. We had an awesome time interviewing Brendan Steer, the genius behind the Velocipastor. That was awesome. That was so much fun. I mean, one of my favorite guests we've had so far. Hopefully we'll have him on again. Hopefully my Bigfoot CIA assassin movie will become a thing. I don't need any money from it. I just want it to exist.
Just for your own sake.
Brendan seemed to like it, so I'm hoping that he writes the script at least.
Yeah.
So thank you guys all for tuning in. Go check out the Velocipastor. Go check out Brendan's work. He's an awesome dude. Make sure to check out our podcast. Like I said before, leave a review. It really helps us show up on the iTunes.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure to check out our website, misfitsandmysteries.com, where you can find our blogs, all of our latest episodes. And you can also find us on social at podcast_misfits on Instagram and Twitter. We also have a YouTube, Misfits and Mysteries. So check us out.
Oh, and make sure to check out our merch store. It's Misfits and Mysteries on TeePublic. Link is going to be in the description. And also make sure to sign up for our newsletter on the website. The first edition of the Misfits and Mysteries newsletter came out last Friday. It was a recap of 2020. Make sure you sign up for exclusive news. You'll find out what's going on. The only people who knew in advance that Brendan Steer was coming on were the people who signed up for the newsletter. So if you want to know about special deals with our merch, new merch drops, future guests, you're going to have to sign up for the newsletter. So you might as well do it.
As
always, guys, stay spooky and have a great day.
Stay spooky.
Bye.